Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Debate physics also, but .com. But the debate is pretty thin. So anyway, we'll try to do the whole big picture. You know, the theory of everything, the cycle of energy, the what is the universe really doing when you look out there? You know, what are you really looking at? And when you attempt to understand what's making you work, or you know, how the stuff on the earth is working, it's just about following the money, so to speak. Follow the energy, follow the mechanical system, okay, that's just running itself out. It's just, you know. So I'd argue that there's just very few elements in the universe. There's just, you know, there's two kinds of stuff moving the speed of light, and it's just little bits of stuff, a quantum of energy. And the fact is there's some bits that aren't moving, okay? So we call them matter. So it doesn't really matter what we make them, how big we make them, or any of that stuff. Just the thing to understand is that the moving bit can stick to the dead bit, and the dead bit will move at some other speed, okay? It won't move the speed of light, it'll move, you know, some combination of the two speeds. And we can call these electrons, and we'll call the red ones protons. And so all you have in the universe is two kinds of force, proton force and electron force. And they function inversely. That is, the red force is transparent to the green, and the green is transparent to the red. They don't interact. And that creates a kind of polarization. That is, when you have a bunch of the force coming in, if there's some object that's arranged, red, green, red, green, red, green, the fact is parts will reflect and other parts will pass through, and you end up with a difference in the force coming out, in the sense that if it's, well, the trick is that the what really happens is when the green goes into the red, it actually turns red. So the protons are always radiating red, and the electrons are always radiating green, because no matter what force goes in, that's what comes out, effectively, eventually. Now, if a green force hits an electron, I mean, the electron is pushed and it's moved. Anyway, so that's all there is, that the basic elemental function. You know, now for the circle of life kind of shit, the idea of where does it start and where does it end, you know, in terms of this circle of energy. So all you have is this stuff moving in all kinds of directions in the universe. And how, okay, does that turn into what you see? So we have the big universe, okay, you got the swirly galaxy things, okay, and you got some patches of them, you know, groups of them, but not much. So we could say those are the big objects in the universe. And then you got this, the smallest object, which is whatever this quantum stuff is. And I would argue that's what it is. Okay, but it's really just bits of energy. So that's the key part. Just bits of energy moving the speed of light and matter, okay, that doesn't move the speed of light. All right, so, and I'm just making the obvious argument that the stuff that does make matter eventually move is this stuff. This is the penny. Okay, so the pennies of the universe, the money, okay, the smallest unit of currency is a quantum bit of energy. I think Einstein called it something. I can't remember what he called it, but anyway, it doesn't really matter. All right, so that's the extreme. You have the penny, and then you have objects that are, you know, I can't even give you a number, like some gigantic number with 400 million zeros of number, a collection of this stuff over here that's in this stuff over there. And even us, you know, we have, you know, hundreds of billions of cells, let alone how many atoms that would be, you know, just an insane kind of number. Anyway, all right, so this stuff gets into a shape, a form. So I guess that's the first thing to argue, is that first all you have is the stuff. You got a proton and you got an electron. So I guess I'll go back to the colored pictures. And, yeah, I guess over here is as good as any. All right, so you have protons and electrons. Now, you know, a simple argument I would make is that they've already sort of, you know, found out that a neutron is really made out of a proton and an electron. Okay, so you take an electron and proton, put them in association with each other, and you have some new thing called a neutron. And it's not really neutral, it's just that its polarization is variable. Okay, you could even say it was spinning. Obviously, if it was spinning, you could sort of get the idea that it always looks the same. Half red, half green. Okay, so it would end up brown. Now, if that was red and blue, you could understand it would be purple. So you could sort of understand that the universe has a lot of purple in it. And the real trick is what magnets do and other things do, is they sort of convert purple into blue and red. But anyway. All right, now inside of suns, they argue that, you know, there's fusion and fission and different kinds of things going on in there. But I would argue that that's eventually, you know, that's how this thing collects. So the first collection, you could argue, is the neutron. And the neutron, it just happens to be this way, essentially looks just like a hydrogen atom. I mean, it's got all the pieces to call it a hydrogen atom. And the fact is the hydrogen atom doesn't like to be by itself. Okay, and when it's in this form, and so it creates an object that I would argue they could sort of understand that might just look like this. It likes to be in this molecular form, non-molecular, this compound form. And then you could sort of argue that if there was energy pushing, okay, little bits pushing this stuff, that it could push it in a trap. And the trap just means the energy flows endlessly in the object. Now, I would argue it's more likely that it's bouncing back and forth, but whatever. It doesn't really matter. You get the idea that for this thing to stay together, because of the rules, because of the rules where the red turns green and the green turns red and all that stuff, the fact is that this stuff could have a whole bunch of this little quanta stuff inside of this arrangement. So inside of this arrangement that isn't moving anywhere is a bunch of energy that's just trapped. So it's like it's in a jar, okay? And the energy just can't get out. It's caught bouncing inside of that configuration, that atom. So that's what basically E equals mc squared is basically just saying, you know, the C squared is just a made-up thing. Okay, I mean, Einstein just said, let's just use a big number. Okay, you really don't need to do this. You just say big, okay? Big number, okay? There. And you've done your job. It's, you know, so the mass, a little bit of mass in here, has a whole bunch of energy bouncing around between the little mass bits. And that's the cycle of atoms. So what's happening inside of suns, you can sort of understand because of gravity, okay, and gravity is just created because, you know, gravity is made when you do the force bit thing and you push a piece of matter. That is, so every time a piece of force hits a piece of matter, a little bit of gravity is created because the piece of force, okay, is moving the speed of light, and when it hits the electron or the proton, it starts going slower than the speed of light. So you can sort of understand that anything that was over here waiting to get, you know, it's getting hit by the heads over here and it's waiting for a tail to hit it on the other side to even things out. Well, the tail doesn't get there because the tail has been slowed down pushing a piece of matter. So every time a piece of matter is pushed, you're creating gravity. You're sort of deadening the speed of light of the force. The force had a place it was going to go in the universe. And if it hits matter, it doesn't go to as many places because it ran out of time. So hitting matter, pushing matter, steals a little bit of the energy of the force. Now, technically, the matter is moving, so that's a replacement for the force. But obviously, the force isn't in the same form in the sense that you've degraded, you've changed what's going to take place by delaying what's going to take place. Essentially. Okay, so this piece of matter has to move this way because this piece of matter, this was blocking a force, essentially using a force. And so that's the equal and opposite reaction that takes place in the universe. So anyway, so gravity is created every time one of the little force bits hits a matter bit. Essentially, you're creating some gravity. So, and the gravity is the idea that this thing has to move in. So that's what's causing stuff to move in, is there's zillions and zillions of these little bits of force flying through the universe. So every time I draw one in black, I'm just saying it's purple. You know, it's red or it's green. It's red or it's blue. And so it's constantly coming from the outside in to everything. Everything in the universe is being attacked, essentially, by the universe with a ton of this energy. Just keeps coming at it, keeps coming at it, keeps coming at it. And that's what's pushing everything together, because as soon as one bit moves, gets pushed, that creates gravity that pulls another piece towards it, so to speak. No pulling, but allows the push to push it closer to it. And so that's what creates these neutrons and these hydrogen atoms. And then they, as a collective unit, are also creating gravity. So anything, every time they get pushed, the atom itself moves. Well, now the atom itself is moving, so it's a whole atom's worth of delay, of force consumption, so to speak. And the other atoms feel that, and they move together, and they clump. And so as they clump, they become bigger and bigger objects. And as the bigger and bigger objects have pieces inside of them that keep moving, right, all these pieces are moving in different directions, doing different things, jiggling about, bouncing back and forth. And every time they bounce back and forth, every time they do that, okay, they're creating gravity that way, and they're creating gravity that way. And so you can sort of imagine inside the Earth, there's a bunch of atoms doing this and this and this. And every time they do this, they're creating gravity in that direction. Then it's gravity in that direction, and gravity in that direction. So that's what's causing the gravity, is the movement of mass. The stuff that doesn't moving, the dead stuff. Every time a piece of dead stuff moves, a little bit of gravity is being created. So then you get these dense objects like suns. So now we're finally into the big universe, all right? And there's very high pressure in them because they have a lot of mass. They're creating lots of gravity, lots of jiggling going on, and lots of little atoms moving about. And the pressure inside there gets really high. And in that high pressure, lots of little bits of energy force, bouncing about, pushing little bits of atom, you make bigger and bigger nucleuses. Okay, so the number of neutrons gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So the atom's really just made out of neutrons, you could argue. And some of them we choose to recognize as protons and electrons, and some of them we choose to see as neutrons. But it's really just a bunch of neutrons with an imbalance. Okay, so the imbalance is that it has fewer electrons. It doesn't need as many electrons as it has protons. So the net balance of the nucleus is always going to be proton heavy, because the argument would be, I can do it in red and black. So imagine the electron's the black, the red is the proton. You can sort of understand that I can create arrangements where I don't need a bunch of the other object, right? So the idea would be is the change in the force, any change in the force color. This one's radiating black all the time, and these are radiating red all the time. And you can sort of understand that if the red doesn't move the black thing, and the black force doesn't move the red things. So you can sort of understand that if you really play with that idea, you'll end up with attraction between the red and the black, and repulsion between the red and the red. The reds are shooting red. Red gives them momentum. So every time they get hit by a piece of red, it gives them momentum and direction. So the reds are pushing away, and they're pushing in towards the black. And you could sort of understand that there'd be an equal amount of pressure repulsion out here between these objects. Means they can't move in any closer. If this red tries to go closer to the black, you can sort of understand it's going to get closer to these other reds, and these other reds are going to push it back. So it ends up with this tension. And this is all force here. So all these lines that would be pushing the protons away from each other, all those are reflections of the universe. It's reflecting everything is hitting it, and it's reflecting it always back as red. So you can sort of get the idea that it's, you know, that you have a balance of the two and that you have a lot of pennies. So the point is the force bit is the penny. So you can sort of understand that every time you create a nucleus, okay, or you create an electron and proton arrangement, you're using a lot of pennies. So that's the E equals mc squared. Okay, that's the m part, right? The mass really doesn't have the energy. Einstein's basically saying energy equals mass. Well, it's not really the mass that has the energy. It's that the masses, when you put them in the form of an atom or an atomic nucleus, they have trapped a whole bunch of pennies. Okay, and you can sort of understand that they can let the pennies loose in any direction. If I pull this proton off, you could sort of understand all these pennies would be released. Okay, and all these would be released, and these would find a new position. So you'd lose pennies every time you pull a proton out. Pennies would go flying out of the nucleus. So inside the high pressure of the sun, these electrons and protons are squished together really close to each other. So they're really, really close, and they have a whole bunch of energy moving through them and back and forth between them. And so that's the E equals mc squared. So you have a whole bunch of potential movement, but it doesn't have any direction here. Okay, it's just stuff moving trapped, going back and forth and going back and forth in all directions. And so it's just kind of trapped in a container, okay, called the nucleus. So that's the key ingredient. Now the electrons that make the rest of the atom, right? So this is net positive. Your nucleus is net positive because it's using more protons than it is electrons. Okay, for every electron, there's two protons. That's sort of the math that works. I drew four here, but it's really just a 2-to-1 relationship. When you start making them bigger, you need to shove in a couple of extra electrons. So in the end, okay, you'll end up with a ratio of twice as many protons as there are electrons in the nucleus. So it's a net positive. And what happens is because you have this net positive, you have lots of places for electrons to collect on the outside here. But the nucleus is really what defines the atomic element. So it's the nucleuses that are hard to break. It's really easy to knock electrons all over the place, you know, the outside electrons. But the nucleus, that's tough. That's hardened because it was made inside of very high pressure, and it's a really strict geometry, really strong geometry, like triangles and squares and octagons, and, you know, it's very strong geometry, so it's very durable. And so you can't break it very easily. And it's really tiny also, just pointing out, it's really, really small. So if there is a trick to it, if there is a trick to, you know, putting a scalpel in and splitting it in two, the trick is really tiny and really hard to get to. And, but it can be done, and that's what the sun is doing. So the sun is combining hydrogen atoms. So it takes two hydrogen atoms to neutrons, and it makes a new subatomic particle. It makes a new atom, new nucleus. Okay, by basically taking two of something, which might be four actually, and making a different ratio. So basically, you're taking a proton, an electron, a proton, an electron, and you're converting it into an electron and two protons. And by doing that, you're giving away one of the electrons, and in that process, you're releasing the energy that was associated with that hydrogen nucleus, the neutron's electron. And so that's why the sun produces light. Now, light is just this stuff. It's just in a shape. It's the same force, but because it has a particular shape or form, it has characteristics that make it react differently when it hits a surface than just the force itself. So a bunch of streaming force isn't going to do the same thing to a surface that when light hits, it hits like a knife. It has a certain shape. It has a configuration that makes it capable of causing a reaction, okay, that is more complicated than just a regular reaction. It hits with a frequency, and a frequency matters. All right, well, this is a bit crowded, so we will condense it. Yeah, that's what we'll do. All right, back. So I guess I'll do a little bit on the atom thing just to keep it clear. So it's the nucleuses that are made in the sun, and the nucleuses are geometry, and the nucleuses are positive, okay? They're proton heavy. All right, and the idea is they're going to pick up the external electrons. So even though there's electrons in here, these electrons are really bound. They're not going anywhere. These extra ones you can pick up out here are picked up because there is a geometry, okay, to this positive. That is, the positive isn't positive. It's not like a proton, the nucleus. It's not radiating all red. There's places that are decidedly green, okay? That green is reflecting. And there's green reflecting out of here. So there's a polarization created by the geometry of the nucleus. And there's clearly places, okay, where the, you know, there's going to be an attraction to a proton here, and there's going to be a repulsion to electrons there. And other places where, yes, an electron would say, yes, I could sit right in here and I could be quite comfortable. So it can collect, this nucleus can collect electrons in all these places that are not electron heavy. And you can understand that arrangement can become a geometry that extends outside of the atom, and there can be specific locations that are safe for an electron to be, and they're still going to repel each other just like they do inside the nucleus. And these are huge distances. I mean, the nucleus is a tiny little thing of compression, and these electrons are way on the outside, and they're stuck in positions, and there'll be an equal, there'll be a number of electrons that'll be somewhat connected to the fact of the extra protons in the nucleus, and the two will be sort of connected to each other. Not explicitly, but there'll be sort of a relationship, and it would just have to do with the geometry again. The geometry of the nucleus is going to dictate the geometry of the electrons. So when we see an atom, what we're really doing is jiggling these electrons in positions, and that has a code associated with it in terms of a frequency it's going to create. They'll vibrate at a frequency, and that'll tell us what kind of element this atom is. But if it wasn't, these electrons weren't attached to the nucleus, there's no way to look at the nucleus and say, oh, I can tell what kind of nucleus that is. It has a mass, but I really can't tell. I can't make it do anything from a distance to be able to tell that nucleus even exists. Because the electrons are really the signature. They're the thing we see because we cause them to vibrate. And as they vibrate, they push into the world, okay? And they push force into the world, and we see the force signature. So I just want to make it clear that the atom, the real core of the atom, is the nucleus. That's the part the sun is making. The electrons are, they're not superfluous, but there are things just automatically added on through the fact that this nucleus moves anywhere, encountering any other matter, it's going to collect electrons. And that's what it does to fill these spots that are empty, okay? The spots that are capable of providing a view of the proton, the plus. They can see the plusness of the nucleus. And there's places where they can't see it because the electron is there and I see the electron. So places where there's no electron, the electron has a good view of the red. It sees the red coming at it. And when it sees red, that means this force, the green force coming from the universe this way, is going to push it in that direction. Because the red means it's probably green force that's been converted into red force, and therefore there's a lack of green. So any excess of red is really just a lack of green, because the green got converted. But anyway, all right, now we'll move on to some bigger picture stuff. Alright, I'm back. So, I really didn't have I don't have like a lesson plan for this video. So, it's just trying to get to the story. So, the story so far, you just have this idea of the force, okay? And it can be, it's going, it has this characteristic of being in these two forms. The matter is in these two forms. The green and the blue would be better colors, but whatever. And then the idea is that you can trap both of these things in these configurations called atoms, okay? So the atoms, close enough, are a combination of this, and that essentially contains energy because the energy is moving back and forth in all directions, you could argue, okay? And so there's lots of it inside of the atom, but it's not going anywhere, right? It doesn't have a decided momentum in any one direction. It just has energy it can give away in any direction depending on how you break it. So if I break it in a certain way, it'll send energy in a certain direction. So when a radioactive decay, for example, what happens is one of these nucleuses splits and it shoots off of one of the interior, the nuclear electrons or protons. And when they fly off, they're going to fly off with a lot of energy because there's a lot of energy trapped in that pushing force inside. And so, one will shoot one this way, and the next one that decays will shoot the energy that way. So the energy ends up being in all directions because the atoms themselves are essentially configured to be in all directions. So it's randomish. But anyway, so the point is there's lots of money, okay, energy, inside this atom, but it's not doing the kind of energy we see in the sense of watching big objects move back and forth. It's energy that's trapped that can go in any direction. So I could find some way to make the atoms of your feet fall apart, and it would release a whole bunch of energy, but the energy would be below you, your mass. And so when the explosion happened, the part of the explosion where your mass is all going to be in, the only part of the explosion, you're not going to feel the explosion going this way or the explosion going this way or the explosion that way. You're going to feel the explosion that hits you, okay? And so you're going to take off. And so now you're going to be seeing some of that stored energy. But in most of the stuff we're talking about, we're not seeing nuclear energy being released. So in a sense, it's a moot point. E equals MC squared isn't too important in all of the kinetic, the stuff happening where we see atoms moving. They're not being moved because nucleuses are exploding. They're being moved, okay, because force, okay, is being interacted between atoms that have this feature of being polarized. So anyway, so you go from the simple idea that you have dead bits that don't move, you have active bits that constantly move, the active bits push the dead bits, they lose a little bit of energy in the process, and that forms atoms, and then the atoms, you can understand, combine, okay, because they are, because they have polarization, because they do have places where their electrons can be shared, and they can become another compound of pluses and minuses of charge, and they can combine into bigger objects. Okay, and so just understand there's only the geometry of these atoms is very specific. That's why there's only 100 geometric configurations that work, that are stable. Well, there's even less that are stable, that can survive outside the pressure of the sun. And, a lot of these nucleuses are unstable and they do decay, and those are the radioactive isotopes and whatnot. The world we live in is this one with these big clumps, and then the big clumps are still in the real universe that has all this force in it, okay, shooting at it, okay, from the universe. All this pressure coming from the external universe, the blackness of space is just full of this stuff flying about, the free stuff. So you could argue that in the universe, you could say 50% of the little bits are stuck inside holding the nucleuses together, and the other 50% are moving freely about, going the speed of light. So the stuff inside is pushing matter, moving little bits, little atoms around, and creating gravity as a consequence. And then the stuff on the outside is essentially the gravity, because it's pushing and there's no push back. I mean, the push goes in, it slows down moving the matter, okay, and less push comes out because of that. So in every direction, more energy goes in than comes out the other side, essentially. Okay, a tiny bit less, because the movement is a consumption of the speed of light, the energy, the velocity. All right, and so then, you know, we just see these giant clumps get bigger into forms and shapes and compounds, and so you could say, well, there's the people part of the universe, and then it gets even bigger in the sense that you create an asteroid in space, some big object. And those objects get bigger and bigger until you get to the size of a sun, and then you get a galaxy and all of that crap. Okay. But that's all there is just this form, this ability to create these denser and denser objects, bigger and bigger objects. And all of the complexity is dependent on this static relationship between electrons and protons. And so I suppose it's worth just pointing out that, you know, charge and magnetism are just based on the fact that you basically have a structure that allows you, okay, to convert, okay, the stuff coming in. You know, the mixed force comes in, and it comes in mixed, comes in purple, essentially, the light, and then it reflects back, obviously, all red on one side and all blue on the other side, those red and blue. So it filters the force coming in into its elemental form of red stuff, proton force, and electron force. And that's what causes stuff to move, and, you know, another magnet can see that configuration, and it will orient itself to be attractive and repelled in a balanced way. And that's why there's order, okay, to how these atoms combine and interconnect with each other, is because of this feature that the green end is going to be attracted to the red end. And this is also working inside of the atoms. It's working inside of the molecules. It's working inside of the compounds. It's working between two magnets. It's working between magnets and the magnetic field of the Earth. All those things. Magnets can see magnets. Polarized objects can see polarized objects. And you can sort of know that they're already doing that inside the atom, because the atoms, especially in all the metals, create a lattice. You know, they have a shape, that's a geometry that's very specific. So when the atoms are combining to each other, they're combining in a specific geometry that creates crystals, layers, where the pattern has to stay consistent. And you know, they can go in different directions depending on the geometry, depending on whether they're triangle based or square based, and, you know, blah 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 blah. So the crystals, okay, make up the object, and those end up being domains, and you can get into all that more complicated chemistry sort of arguments. All right, so we'll go through one last little bit of maybe and see. See what else needs to be added, but that's there's nothing. The big universe is doing something that's just an obvious outcome of the small universe, which is just forces, pushes. It's a push universe, and stuff is just being pushed based on what something else is reflecting at it. You know, the force it's giving away. So it's just about the force. Yeah, you can trap some of it. Like I said, I mean, I have $1 billion worth of energy trapped inside of me, so to speak, zillions of pennies. But they're pennies just doing this and this. They're not going anywhere. And it's not until I move me, the whole thing, and I orient those pennies in a direction, I change the shape, the direction of that crystal. I take the stuff that's all got a geometry and I move it in one direction, that I can have motion, that my energy can have a bias. And the more bias I give it, that is, the more of the little bits I have bouncing this way instead of this way, the more likely it is I can move in a direction. All right. Something like that. All right. So I think to sum up, so whether you have a galaxy, okay, something big in the universe, okay, it's producing what we call photons, okay. Now, photons aren't as simple as people make them out to be. They're not just a blob of something moving at a speed. A photon is a pattern in the field. It's a pattern of electromagnetic, which means, yeah, it's red and green. I mean, it's a pattern of one of those polarized forces, okay. And so, you know, you're sitting here on Earth and, you know, you view the universe by seeing the universe, by seeing things that produce this light. And so we know that we could sit in the dark and we could see the infrared radiation coming off of other objects. Now, it's not very good. It's not a very high definition view of the universe, but it's a view nonetheless. And what you're really just seeing is energy, little bits flying the speed of light off of something, and you're seeing its pattern, you know, the red and green arrangements and such. All right, so that's what we can do as a piece of matter. And to understand, once you understand how that works, then you sort of understand the rest of it in a way. I mean, understanding the gravity principle is the simplest one, right? Okay, you have a force bit moving a speed, it hits a dead matter bit, a little piece of lead. It has to push the piece of lead, so it moves at a much slower speed here, okay, B instead of C, okay? It's moving C here, it moves B here. And then if another bit hits and it reflects both of them, then they're back to going C again, okay? And the matter's dead again, that kind of thing. But anyway, so you're just viewing the universe, viewing these big, giant arrangements of stuff. And what you're really doing, again, is you're transmitting a force. The little bits are flying from one location to another, and you're going to translate them into a perception that that thing exists. And the way you're going to know that is because the surfaces are covered with these atoms that are all stuck to each other. That's why they're in a clump, is because they've been magnetically and gravitationally attached. Okay, they're doing the red-green thing and, you know, the charge thing, the magnetism thing, and they're doing the gravity thing, okay, where they're, you know, being attached to each other by these combined forces. And what's really happening is something else is reflecting. The rest of the universe is hitting it. It depends on what the rest of the universe is sending, right? So if I can send a signal, that is, I can send a bunch of the little force bits, and a bunch of them are clumped together, okay, and then there's nothing, and then there's a bunch of them clumped together, okay, that's a pattern, okay, a frequency, a wavelength between the condensation. So if I could move my hand the speed of light, theoretically, I would be going as fast as the light, so I would collect all of the little photon bits, all of the little force bits would be stuck on my hand, because although they want to reflect, right, my hand hits the force bit wants to reflect, but it can't reflect because I'm going as fast as it's going, so it just gets stuck there. So you go to understand, if I'm going less than the speed of light, that I could take force bits that were here, 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 and here, and I could condense them into here, 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 and here. I could smash them closer together. They take up less space. And that's the frequency of different light. Different light is created by electrons moving at different speeds. The faster they move, the more it compresses. The slower they move, the less it compresses. And that's the frequency being created. And so what happens when that frequency hit atoms is that that frequency has a polarization and it's made of elements, okay? To have a frequency, you have to have more than one thing, right? One thing isn't a frequency. You need two, three, four. And that frequency hits the atom. It pushes an electron. Then the frequency hits again here, okay? Another clump of the frequency hits here, okay? So this electron, you already gave it a little bit of speed, all right? Now you give it a little bit more speed because you push it again, all right? And then it hits again and gives it a little more speed. And you hit it hard enough, you go and pop it right out of the atom, the photoelectric effect, essentially. But just pushing it along at a faster speed ends up polarizing each one of these atoms as you're doing it. So you're basically creating a little electrical pattern. So the electricity does the same thing. Electricity transfers an electron from one atom to another atom. And as you're transferring them, the atoms are essentially got shaping change. Okay, the atom goes from this shape to round to this shape to round as they share the pressure. They're changing shape, and as they change shape, they're going from red to green, red, green, red, green. They're changing color because their electrons are changing their position, and that changes what the rest of the universe sees. All right, and so it's essentially just duplicating what electricity does. So electricity goes from atom to atom to atom, pushing an electron, changing the shape of the atoms as it's doing that, creating a magnetic pattern. And when you hit it with light, you're essentially just duplicating the same thing, okay? So the same pattern you created, okay, but with electricity. I mean, you can run electricity through a wire, create photons, okay? What you're creating is a pattern. You're not really creating some new photon. You're creating a pattern in the atoms, okay, that's reflecting. So you're just changing how the force going in gets reflected out by changing what the atoms look like. But anyway, the point to understand is we don't see, okay, photons. We see electricity. Detectors of photons are detecting the electricity created in a substance by the photons hitting and sending electrons in a direction and polarizing the crystal inside the metal and creating an electric potential difference, and we're just measuring the electrical potential difference and saying, ah, photon, activity, action, something hit, a photon hit. All right, and so the sending process is just the receiving process in reverse, in the sense that you send electricity into an antenna of some kind, any piece of matter, and it travels up the antenna, and as it travels up the antenna, it's pushing electrons. When it pushes the electron compresses everything that's going to reflect off of it. It compresses the force coming off of it. It creates a little compression in the fields, and those compressions have a polarization in space, okay, a timing. This one happened first, this one second, this one third, and that timing guarantees that when they hit another surface, they'll do the same thing. They'll create the same reaction. So anyway, so the whole point of this is that you're made of these atoms, okay, of a bunch of matter, and when photons hit your exterior, are parts of you, they create this electricity, this activity, and you'll either feel it as warmth, if your eyes get it, your retina will convert it, obviously, into electric signals. Electric signals go into your brain and say, yes, a photon hit. I got a piece of information, okay, I'm getting information, there is a thing there because it's sending me a signal. Yeah, and so that's how we perceive the other objects in our environment. And the other objects are just doing what our object is doing. It's a bunch of matter, and it's channeling a bunch of energy through it, through electricity and other subatomic processes, electrical and magnetic processes, charge, and all of that motion is making us gravitational because it's consuming, you know, the energy coming in is getting consumed, moving a bunch of crap inside of us, so less is coming out, and, you know, making us gravitational, and, you know, that's all there is, and so other stuff will stick to us in space, and we'll get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, whatever. But the same, so all these processes are just about, you know, your compounds and liquids and rivers and oceans. All of that stuff is kind of minor. It's a tiny little piece of the universe that's doing chemistry. You know, most of the universe is just doing atoms, okay, clumped. You know, it's doing really simple chemistry. It doesn't have all this complex trees and buildings and all this bullshit. So most of the universe is showing you what the universe is really made out of, which is clumps of shit. And a bunch of force pushing the clumps of shit around, and that's all there really is. There's just the force tells the matter where it's going, and when the matter goes somewhere, it changes how the force will reflect off of it, okay, which causes some new piece of matter to be affected by the change in the force created by you moving the piece of matter. And so it's just a tug of war between the active force and the dead force. The stuff moving and the electrons and protons, the matter, which isn't moving until a force pushes it. The end. All right. So, math. For a first try, we'll say that was adequate. It's not exactly circle of life, but I mean, come on. It's just, you look into the big universe and what do you see? I mean, it's just clumps of shit. And they're moving around, and you can understand that they're moving around because they're in a field of energy that's essentially pushing them. You see, the supernova, what's happening when it's supernovas? Well, a bunch of the energy that was trapped, the little tiny bits, are released, and they're stuck in a big cloud of matter. So what do they have to do? They have to push all that matter out of the way. They're on their way, going out from a center. And the only way they can go on their way is they have to push the matter with them, so they take some matter with them until they're free again. I mean, it's just kind of obvious what's going on. Not complicated. Point is, you don't need any wooey entanglement or any kind of ether or any kind of wavy crap or whatever, fieldy things and all that crap. You don't need any of that crap. Yeah. It's all crap. You heard it here first. This is the way it really works. It's just force, bits moving, the speed of light, and bits that aren't moving until the force forces them to move. And that's it. Alright. Well, till the next time and such. I think that's enough, really. So, been to draftphysics.com video presentation. To a dead universe. Yeah, I mean, to a universe that just couldn't care less. I mean, even the humans, brain dead. No point in talking to them. Way too stupid. All right, anyway, till the next time and such.